Right. It is a great pleasure to be here with you. I happen to think that this subject is fascinating. I regret I probably won't do it justice. So I'm just sharing with you really aspects of a work in progress. We've called today's presentation Individualism, Collectivism, Hasidism. I told this to someone, they said, oh, all the isms. Lots of isms. Well, the point is that there is a kind of mocking, maskilic presentation of the Hasid as a person. A Hasid is, in conventional terms today, thought of as a Hasid is someone who has a Rebbe. A Rebbe is his teacher, a kind of a spiritual special guide, a spiritual guide. And very often in Hasidic life, the Hasid will ask the advice of the Rebbe concerning all kinds of aspects of life, including even when he's proposing or she's proposing to get married to someone, they will ask the Rebbe for the Rebbe's agreement. Not only, they don't just say, we are getting married and we're just informing the Rebbe, is this the right person to marry? And the Rebbe, who has spiritual insight, will generally say yes, but might sometimes not do so. And this might apply to a whole range of personal activities. And when you look at Hasidim, just on the very superficial level, they tend to look the same. Hasidic men have a beard and glasses. How this is organized with the opticians of the world, I'm not sure. And there are so this sort of sense of similarity, and they do things as it were, imitating the Rebbe. So, if so, isn't this a collectivist group? How does that fit into the modern world? The modern world is characterized by individualism. So we're going to try to explore this briefly in the few minutes we've got. 20 minutes, I think, so I've got to keep track of the time. Right, so that's still 37. So let me try to present you this. Now, first of all, what I want to present are a number of polarisms, polarities. Now, one is obviously collectivism and individualism, and the key person who's written a book about this, or several books, is Triandis, Harry C. Triandis. He actually came from Greece, and then he studied in America. So he treats Greece as a collectivist society. And then he moved to the States, where he studied in an American university and was exposed to an intensely individualist atmosphere. And so as a result, he has gathered together research. He's promoted and gathered together research from all over the world. Japan, the Far East, Africa, many European countries, the whole issue of collectivism on the one hand and individualism on the other, and he believes that no society is wholly one or the other. And also you always have individuals within a society who are trying to do the other thing. So they might be individualists who are in the middle of a collective, or you might have collectivists in the middle of an individualist society, but they really have ties to their familial collectivist structure. Now, he also uses the terms tight or loose. A tight society is one where there are lots of rules, like in Jewish life, yes? Is it kosher? So you can have a very tight society. Or it can be loose. You can eat what you like, you can do what you like, you can have intimate relations with who you like. But at the same time, that can also be in it's not quite parallel with collectivism or individualism. Very often collectivist societies are indeed tight. They have lots of rules. But you could have a collective which is very loose and free, and that's part of the rule of being in the collective, that you can do what you like, that there are no rules, or no rules of a specific kind. Also, hierarchy, and hierarchical and egalitarian societies. You can have a collective society which is egalitarian, like an Israeli kibbutz. It's a collective, but it's egalitarian. Or you can have a collective society which is very thoroughly hierarchical. You can also have individualist societies which are hierarchical, like American academic society, for example. You have the professors, you know, top people, top professors. In the academic world, very often you cannot do things outside certain hierarchical structures. Israeli academic life is a bit like that as well. And with very, very strong sense of rules. And on the other hand, you have universities which are quite different. I remember once there was a proposal that our university, UCL, London, should merge with another university which was also in London. There were some kind of talks which went on, and the talks failed, because UCL claimed the other university, which shall be nameless, was very hierarchical. And UCL, I would say, having worked there a long time, it's very egalitarian. So, but the other university was very hierarchical and egalitarian. UCL could not see itself blending with this hierarchical other institution. Both institutions remained independent. they continue to exist separately. Now, these are triandis' terms. I also introduce in my examination of this, for the purpose of studying the Hasidic movement, another concept which is, I believe, just as general as the concept he's using: theocentric and anthropocentric. Now, my colleague, Professor Rachel Elior, invented these terms in trying to describe the second generation of Chabad, where there was one figure called Rabbi Aaron of Staroselye, whom she typified as being theocentric, focused on God, whereas his rival, Rabbi Dov Ber, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, was, she described as anthropocentric, focused on the individual. Both in totally religious terms, but it's a way of thinking about religion, two different dimensions. And I think they're valid, and I think they relate to our subject. Now, so we can see we've got here a number of these polarities. I'm just going to summarize: collectivist, individualist, or tight and loose, or hierarchical, egalitarian. And each of these can be independent of the others, and theocentric, anthropocentric. Now, crossing, in a sense, deconstructing this is a very interesting idea created by an English anthropologist called Victor Turner. And that's the idea of communitas. And I was intrigued to see that Triandis, in the hundreds of works that he cites in his bibliography, does not mention Victor Turner or Victor's widow, Edith Turner, who both wrote extensively on the concept of communitas. Now, communitas, are you familiar? Is anyone familiar with the term communitas? Peut-être, non? Communitas breaks through normal structures. The whole concept of communitas is that it is independent of all other kinds of structure in the society. It might be various kinds of religious or more loosely quote-unquote spiritual or sport events, climbing a mountain together, a group of people climb a mountain together. They've come from all different parts of society. Some are rich, some are poor, but they all like mountain climbing, and they all scramble up together, and now they're and there was a terrible storm, and they've got to this mountain hut at the top of somewhere, and they're sitting there having tea in this mountain hut. At that moment, there is a sense of communitas. They've done it together. And it makes no difference whether this person is a millionaire and the other person just is whatever it is. They're there together. They're united together at that moment. So Victor Triandis, who passed away, and his widow have researched this, and I think it's very relevant. I'm not the first person to say it. Chaviva Padaya, a great scholar of Jewish thought, musicology, Kabbalah, and Hasidism, she applies this term to the Hasidic movement, and I think she's right. Now, when we consider individualism and any kind of Jewish movement, we have to, of course, look at the background, the biblical background, where we have intense moments of personal, individual relationship with the divine. Moses on Mount Sinai, right? In yesterday's Torah reading. Moses alone on Mount Sinai, talking to God in this most intimate, personal way. The problem is, does a Jewish leader today say to an individual, you are Moses on Mount Sinai, you are the person who alone is speaking to God? Is that how they present it? Never mind Moses of Mount Sinai, early before spoke about Maimonides. How is Maimonides treated? Now there's a text of Maimonides which says, a person, every person, should consider that at every moment the world is equally balanced between good and bad. You are equally balanced between good and bad. Your next step is going to change things for the whole world. It's an astonishing statement. It makes the individual pivotal for the whole world. And it means that your or my next step is going to change the whole of existence. Now that is written in Maimonides' books over here. The question is, does a Jewish leader in France in the 14th century say, ooh, you must read this passage by Maimonides, or is it left hidden in the books of Maimonides? And maybe no one ever reads it, and it's never relevant to anyone. I know about it because the Lubavitcher Rebbe took this passage and made it an iconic concept that everyone should be aware of, the importance and the significance of each individual. But it's something which you need the local leader at this time, in your own time, to point out which are the traditional sources which are relevant for us at this particular moment. Now, the point is that in the West, the history of the West, is that whatever the biblical background, the way in which Christian Europe in the early Middle Ages, the Christian Middle Ages, was one in which the grand idea, the grand ideal, became the principle of life, to the submersion and the submission of the suppression of the individual. So the individual did not have a role. Heusinger, the famous historian, Johann Heusinger, he points out that around the year 1000, paintings don't depict people, they depict types. And they show the office that they have rather than the individual. And then as we get into the later, the waning of the Middle Ages, as Heusinger calls it, you get a new kind of individual focus and the emergence of the individual, the Delphic maxim, know thyself. And they interpreted from the Song of Songs, in Lo Tedi Lach Hayafam Benashim, Tedi Lach, you have to know yourself. In fact, the way the Hasidim speak about it, when God speaks to Adam Adam and Eve have just eaten from the tree of knowledge. And God says to Adam, Ayeka, where are you? That is an appeal to the individual to say, where am I? Where am I in life? But in order to get that interpretation, the entire Talmudic literature does not have that interpretation. Nor does even Maimonides. It's from the Lubavitcher Rebbe of the 18th century where we have that concept. So it is a movement through, on the one hand, a theocentric way of looking at life, that life is what the law is telling us to do, or an anthropocentric focus on the individual. Now, that's when we look at the Jews in the time of the beginning of the Hasidic movement. In fact, there were a number of different groups of people who were emerging with new kinds of quality. Now, for example, let's take the rise of Lithuanian Talmudic scholarship. Now, here you have a new approach to Talmudic thought, very highly individualist in its nature, with each person trying to be a great Talmudist. And this attempt to master scholarship in a particular way, along particular patterns, and with a very strong competitive style to it. Now, at another extreme in the Jewish community, you have the Maskilim. You have the enlightened, the Jewish Enlightenment, members of the Jewish Enlightenment, who felt that the Jewish religion was oppressive, and they were trying to assert their individuality, which sometimes led, in extreme cases, to leaving the Jewish community, more commonly, trying to change the community and make it more westernized, more individualist, because together with, after the Renaissance, of course, the Enlightenment brought even more emphasis on the individual. Now, let's look at Hasidism. Where does Hasidism stand on this position of individual versus collective? Now, if we only look at the tzaddikim, the rebbeim, the Hasidic leaders, which was the beginning of the research that was done by academic scholars, whether it was Dubnov or Gershon Sholem or whoever it might have been, looking at, so Martin Buber, looking at the Hasidic leader, each one is a different kind of individualist. They're phenomenal. There was even a person who toured Eastern Europe in the 1880s, and he wrote a book about it, and he believed that each Hasidic group represented a different style of contemporary German philosophy. So there were the idealists, but that is in terms of the leader of the group. What about the Hasidic follower? Is the Hasidic follower simply a person, he does what the leader says? Now, we have a very interesting case, for example, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov is one of the most remarkable individuals who ever lived. His Hasidic teachings are like poems of his own inner struggle, and struggle with the divine, and struggle to bring the Messiah. There's an amazing aspect to his writing. Now, and his social relations with other people. He chose to live in a place called Uman, where he finally passed away and was buried. And in Uman, there were a group of very secular Jews, Maskilim, who had left practical Judaism. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov encouraged those people to come and visit him, to talk about poetry with him, to discuss Schiller and other things, and they played chess together. His own Hasidim could not understand this at all. So he was in a sense in a completely individualistic path. But as reported by one of his Hasidim, Rabbi Nachman said to us, there was two Hasidim, Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Naftali, Rabbi Natan Sternhatz And Rabbi Naftali, another follower of Rabbi Nachman, he said, I have you two tied up in a sack. That's what he said to his two followers. And they said to him, tie us up more. In other words, we want precisely to be tied up in your sack. So you have this like gigantic individualist with his two followers, or maybe his 2,000 followers, tied up in a sack. So is that the nature of Hasidism? Well, when we come to, we're going to stop in a moment, when we come to certain forms of Hasidism, emphasized highly the individual. One very clear form is the Kotzke Hasidim, following Rabbi Nachum Mendel of Kotzk, who was the arch-individualist, and yet he wanted his Hasidim to be arch-individualists as well. He did not want someone who is simply following. It said of Kotzk, a fire, my grandfather told me, a fire burnt in Kotzk. A fire is burning in Kotzk. The intensity of the Kotzke Rebbe's relationship with the divine, and he demanded each one of his followers should try to have the same kind of intensity. Don't tell me anything about wearing the same clothes. In fact, when there was a government decree that Jews should not wear traditional clothing, the Kotzke Rebbe said, I don't want anyone wearing traditional clothing. You can't come to me if you're wearing the traditional clothing of a Hasid. You've got to be dressed in an ordinary way. So he rejected this kind of conventional Hasidism. And then we have Chabad, where at the same time that there are certain collectivist dimensions, there is also a strong individualist quest for the individual to develop his self or herself. And particularly, since we are limited by time, so we will just focus on the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, who quoted that passage by Maimonides, that every person holds, as it were, the fortune of the whole world in their hands. And that means that the individual is at a crucial point. And who encouraged individuals to develop their own special quality which they could contribute to the world. Their special art, their special talent. He encouraged people who were involved in music, people who were involved in art. He created a kind of genre of Hasidic art in a very remarkable way. Art was an anathema to Jewish society around 1910. There's a famous Chabad artist who was only able to become that by running away from home and going to an art school against the wishes of his parents. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, was someone who encouraged people in their quest for their own individuality and then created a fascinating outreach movement where each person is able to use their own creative qualities and insights in order to communicate Jewish teaching or do whatever it is that they're in their own particular way. And there's a fascinating talk by the Rebbe speaking about how he expects his Hasidim to be able to make up their own minds and understand things in their own terms and use their own individual approach to the things that they are trying to achieve. So I believe we've reached the end of our time. So I'm only putting together a little sketch of this profound topic, which I hope to address at some future time. Thank you.
Question and also an interesting footnote, maybe. So when you're speaking about Chabad, you're seeing is that, so you have the three models, absolute individualism, but then somewhere in the middle you have this communitarianism.
Communitas.
Communitas. So the question is, so you say the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe encouraged individuality with a qualification. How does that fit in? So he did not individualism for the sake of individualism, an individualism subsumed to a larger, how does, I just wonder, so where do you fit that in? Is it absolute pure individualism, or is it the...
Well, you see, individualism, when it's taken to the different kinds of extreme, but one extreme of individualism is concern for the world. See, the kind of individualism which is just concerned about gaining more wealth or power is a kind of a very limited concept. The higher dimension of individualism is that the individual is concerned to use his or her talents and power for the benefit of society. You know, it's a great people like Albert Schweitzer, individuals who devoted their lives for the good of, for the well-being of others. So it's in that kind of context that the Rebbe's concept of individualism. But nonetheless, it's as an individual rather than simply as a similar member to every other member in a collective. But at the same time, that individual is joined together with other individuals, each one of whom is doing their own thing in a kind of communitas where they in fact have a beard and glasses, or perhaps not glasses in every case, and look the same and ask the Rebbe about this and about that, and so they follow the conventional dimensions of being a chassid, but their being a chassid means that what the Rebbe is doing is showing that person, through his teachings and letters and ideas, how to develop their own individuality.
Just to nuance it a little bit more, to quote you, you spoke about art, and you raise a question, you mentioned that the Rebbe encouraged the genre of chassidic art, but I remember you discussing and questioning whether art can be hyphenated with anything else. The true art maybe has, it can't be anything. It can't be Hasidic, it can't be anything. It can't be subsumed to any other ideal. It has to be the quest, the pure quest in and of itself. So maybe I'm asking, so to what, how much did the Rebbe, like you said in Cuts, for example, the Cuts Rebbe, in a religious way, as a religious quest, encourage the individuality, the individualism, in an extreme way. I'm wondering to what degree the Rebbe encouraged the spiritual individualism, or was it tempered, was it hyphenated?
Well, see, this is extremely beautiful and important concept. You see, Max Weber speaks about the problem of individualism and the way in which it leads to what he called an iron cage, in which man is completely limited because he is controlled by the rational structures of modernity and the heartlessness of modernity, which Weber very carefully describes, that even without sophisticated technology, you have the way in which it used to be that people who were doing some kind of trading in wool and weaving the wool into garments, they used to trade. A trades with B because A's grandfather traded with B's grandfather. But now A and B are just looking for the most profit, and so they break these traditional lines of connection, and it leads to brothers becoming others. The Bruder becomes an Oder. So that precisely is where the individualism goes over the edge. And so in order to be a human being who retains links with a wife, with children, with parents, with community, with his own inner self, and with God, you need to have a structure where at the same time there's a collectivist dimension and an individualistic dimension, and also to sometimes be able to deconstruct all those rules and just have that moment of communitas, like hearing a sicha or a verbrengen, or singing a niggun together, and singing a Hasidic melody and going beyond. Thank you.